This is P.S. You're Wrong, the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love. And we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Wait, where am I? Who is this? What's going on? I have amnesia.
Is that your Ryan Gosling impression?
I was going to attempt to do The Rock, like, but then, we are here to discuss Project Hail Mary, the new sci-fi film adapted from an Andy Weir novel. Have you read this book?
Oh, have I? Yeah. I was one of the like early adopters of this novel.
I was going to say, this feels very up your alley. I didn't read, I haven't read any of his books because he's the same guy who wrote The Martian. Mm-hmm. Which obviously became a Best Picture nominee, was a very big deal. And then he wrote a book called Artemis that I think people didn't also really read.
Nobody liked it. That's correct. Yes.
And largely disappeared from view. Although, hot take, I'm like, I bet you anything we get a movie version of that, even though nobody liked the book.
I'm pretty sure they're working on it. Yeah. Oh,
well, there we go. And then in 2021, he wrote Project Hail Mary, which people did like, and which has now been turned into a movie.
Yes. It's very exciting for me. I really loved this novel. It reminded me of sort of like a Michael Crichton, like heavy on the science, but still has a lot of heart. And so, I really was surprised by my love for this novel because sometimes like a really heavy science fiction can feel like I'm just skipping pages to get to the next character beat. Because the book does have like a lot of time dedicated to the science, and that's kind of Andy Weir's thing, is he is a science geek. I mean, even The Martian was self-published because he wrote it on like a blog. People liked it, and then he released it, and then it got so popular that traditional publishing like repackaged it, and he finally got some support and attention. Project Hail Mary was a really fun book. I hadn't known it was being adapted until the first trailer came out last year. I don't remember when, but they have been promoting this hard. It's an Amazon produced film. And they've put a lot of money into this because it has been everywhere. Everywhere. I feel like if you haven't heard of Project Hail Mary, it's kind of wild at this point, because he's been doing the usual, you know, press junket, the usual late night shows, but he's also been talking to all of these like educational venues, or coming to the JPL site up here in California, or NASA, or whatever. He's just like running the campaign right now, and I think it paid off. I mean, this movie did supremely well in the box office, and I mean, broke records obviously for the year, but also for previous years as well. And it's a hugely critically successful as well, and audience reviews have also been supremely positive. So a big hit for everyone involved.
A couple of things regarding his other books. Yes, Artemis is in the works from Lord and Miller, the same team who did this. So they are
Wasn't that bad. It's like a spy thriller set on the moon. It's like it's like an Ocean's 11 style thing, like set on the moon.
Well,
what am I thinking of? Like a heist, like a sort of heisty moon thriller.
And The Martian was adapted by Drew Goddard, who is the writer of Cloverfield and The Cabin in the Woods and World War Z as well. Mm-hmm. And he also adapted Project Hail Mary. Yeah. So I would imagine that they will get him to do the third one. I feel like it wouldn't really make sense if they didn't, since he's done such a good job with the first two. I have not read any of these books. Not that I don't like sci-fi. I do. I feel like I saw The Martian, and then I was like, okay, I don't like this enough that I want to read the next
book.
That's
fair.
And then I heard Artemis was bad, so then I feel like I was sort of like, oh, okay, whatever. When Project Hail Mary came out, I don't even know if I realized that it was that it was a new book. And then, I started seeing all of the stuff about the movie. Coming out in March, I think you never know what the quality level is going to be, especially the Oscars like big sci-fi epics and outer space movies. And so you think, okay, if this was going to be like good, they'd probably put it in the fall sometime. But I saw something on Twitter, which really sort of made sense to me, which is this is a kids movie. Like it's in some ways it's not, like if you think about, but if you think about the beats, it's like this guy gets stuck in outer space. He becomes friends with a rock. It's very like family friendly. It's like a very family friendly movie. And the plot is pretty straightforward. Like there is science or whatever, but you know, so I think that this movie was always angled to be more of like a big blockbuster, like four quadrant hit than where I feel like The Martian was a little more prickly, if I'm remembering correctly.
Wait,
you disagree?
So wait, your theory. So wait, back up. I need to connect dot better.
Okay, yes.
Uh-huh. You're saying that it was released in March because families will like it instead of saving it for Oscar baity season, when they want something more prestigious?
Yeah, like I think I thought this movie was maybe going to be bad because it was set for a spring release date. And I'm like, okay, The Martian obviously got an Oscar nomination. Yeah, so if we're going that route, then why didn't you save this and have a premiere at Venice or something? But I think that The Martian felt like more of an adult, like in a movie for adults, where I think this feels like more of a movie for families. I think that you can take a 10-year-old to see this, and I think that they're more interested. It's like, oh, he's friends with The Rock, and it's funny, and there's it's more goofy, and it's cool to look at. And like, yes, there is science, but I don't know. I think you can kind of like breeze past that in some ways, or like that's not the most interesting part of the movie. Whereas, and so I think that the studio like knew that they had sort of like a bigger hit on their hands and were like, okay, we're going to put this in the slot that, you know, like Black Panther was in instead, where this can come out. And if people like it, like they can go see it at the theater for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, because there's not another big, it's not like Jurassic Park is coming out next week. And that's another movie that like 12-year-olds are going to want to go see.
Yeah, yes, I see your point. I see your point. It seems like 2 points. And I want to just break up this like, oh, it's a family film. Like, see your point. But it's not like the Goonies or like something like geared towards an audience of 12-year-olds. Like, it's still dealing with death. It's still dealing with the world ending. Like, it's still dealing with loneliness and you know, trauma for various species. So I do feel like it has that, like, you know, target audience of the 25 to 49 crowd for me.
Yes.
But I can see that. I mean, I think also this year, looking at the calendar, you're not going to go against Dune. You're not going to go against Doomsday. You're not going to go against, you know, there's just like a lot of big fall films already set. And so I think we've also seen over the last few years that the spring window does tend to work, because you don't have the distractions of your like traditional summer blockbusters that hit big and fizzle fast. Whereas this allows for sort of the word of mouth to build, same with Sinners last year or something like that. So I too was worried about the spring release, just because another one of my favorite books of recent years was that like they called the movie something different, but it was that George Clooney space movie where he's like,
oh yes,
and that did disastrously. That was like a Netflix bomb. No one saw it.
That was like COVID year though.
Yeah. Yeah, it was set for failure. But so I was worried that it would be like that. But yes. No, there was a lot of care put into it. And once you saw the marketing budget, you're like, okay, this has to be good to some degree. Like, you know, because they're really selling it. And it has its own popcorn bucket. So
it's interesting because, like, yes, in hindsight, it all makes sense of, okay, they knew they had a hit on their hands. So they put it in a period where there wasn't a lot of competition. They spent a lot of money. Like, I went and saw this. I'm in Florida now for the month. And, like, I went and saw it with my, like, aunt, uncle, cousins.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, we haven't seen a movie in, like, you know.
Okay, yeah.
In, like, months. And granted, I was there, so part of it was that, like, I wanted to go see it. Right. But the fact that they all wanted to go see it, I think.
Correct, yeah. It's a crowd pleaser.
The with us, there was, like, little kids. Right. But then also, like, a lot of old people. I mean, it's Florida. Mm-hmm. But, it, like like, walker's wheelchair type old people. I was trying to get popcorn at the theater. And so, you know, I'm in the, like, Stubbs line or whatever. And there's two cash registers that are open. And one of them is this man with, like, four little kids trying to pay with cash and change. And the other was a group of maybe like 12 senior citizens who had clearly all come together, and they were flummoxed by how the price was different for the people who paid online ahead of time versus the people who were buying your tickets there. And the people who had paid ahead of time had printed out, like, full piece of paper, like, through the through the copy machine, like, and brought that as their ticket. And then they were, like, upset that they had paid more than the people who had bought their tickets there. So it was really drawing from all quadrants. And I think, yeah, it's gotten good word of mouth. It has, like, a 95% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's made a ton of money. And if you can be, like, Sinners and be the good movie that comes out at this time of year without a lot of competition, you can make a lot of money. However, it's interesting that this came only weeks after Wuthering Heights, which is another movie that they spent a lot of money for, but sort of seems like the opposite thing of, like, oh, they knew it was kind of bad, so they were like, okay, we need to spend a lot of money up front to get as many people to go see it during the opening weekend as possible before the word of mouth gets out that, like, oh, this isn't good, you don't need to see it.
That's true. I'd forgotten about Wuthering Heights. Bless your heart.
How dare you forget about Wuthering Heights?
I know. No, but yeah, Project Hail Mary. I'm glad it was so good because I did love the book. And loving a book sometimes makes it hard to enjoy a movie. But they did a really good job, I think, in stripping down some of the, like they hit all the same beats. I think they obviously stripped down some of the science talk just because you don't, you know, have this internal monologue of a man explaining the workings of space travel and the different environments of him and his buddy Rocky, blah 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 blah, 100 pages of that. So it's all streamlined, but it was really fun to see it come together. And I think, you know, looking at how the film was made, it's clear that this was a passion project. Like, Andy Weir sent the manuscript to Ryan Gosling before it was even published and was like, I want you to produce the film of this. And unlike The Martian, Andy Weir stayed on as part of I don't know if his title was producer or if he just had, like, a better relationship to be there
or whatever.
Yeah, so he was still involved. They knew they wanted
it looks
to
like
get
he was a producer.
Okay, yeah, they knew they wanted to get Chris Lord or no, and Lord and
Phil Lord and
Phil Chris Lord and Chris Miller, and that's fun in its own way because those guys have mainly done animation. They've done the Lego movies to great success. They have been involved in, obviously, Into the Spider-Verse. They did. And then they have, like, 21 Jump Street as their live action franchise. So this is, like, a big project for them. But having them all invested in it on the creative level allowed them to put the, like, time and care into, like, really knowing what they wanted and then sticking to that. Because usually with a big budget film, you have a lot of hands in the pot. You have a lot of people with a lot of opinions, and most of them aren't that emotionally attached. But it's nice when you get these kind of like flexibilities that come with keeping the crew tight and just insisting on your creative vision that's based in love of the original material, which I guess you could argue was true for Wuthering Heights too, but it just didn't work. It just didn't stick. Well, the magic sauce wasn't there.
not to go back to my favorite plot, which is, was there bad CG in this movie or not? Yeah. But this movie did not use green screens. It
yes.
did not use blue screens. It did not use AI. Like, obviously, there's yeah. lots of visual effects in it, but it's mostly practical effects.
Yes.
They built the spaceship. They built mm-hmm. the robot, which is like, or not a robot,
puppet.
The rock monster alien, mm-hmm. which is a puppet.
Don't call him a monster.
Whatever.
He's my dear close friend.
So the yeah, and it looks stunning. Like
yeah.
the whole thing is beautiful.
Yeah.
It really works. And I think that yeah, the like time and attention and the craft and the detail that they put
yeah.
into this really paid off.
Yeah.
I am the one thing that I'm sort of confused by, which I think maybe will be helpful since you read the book. The like amnesia plot line
mm-hmm,
I
mm-hmm.
found confusing. From what I gather, the book is in chronological order. Yes.
No,
or
it's the same.
Flashbacks.
Yeah,
oh,
it's
okay.
flashbacks.
Okay.
Because he wakes up, he doesn't remember anything.
Okay.
And then he problem solves, remembers something. Problem solves,
okay.
remembers something.
Because
so.
I was confused for the movie as mm-hmm. to how the amnesia was working and when, like. If the flashbacks were him remembering things or
yeah.
if they were just flashbacks, and then how much like by the end he had
right.
remembered and sort of why the amnesia
yeah.
was working.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of times with amnesia movies or TV shows, we sort of get the scene where they're like, oh, it's all coming
yeah.
back to me
yeah.
sort of thing.
Yeah.
And we never really got that
yeah.
in this. So I was confused
yeah.
as to how that operates.
I didn't see that.
So in the book, by the time you get to the end, he remembers everything.
Yeah. And it's
okay.
and it's done sort of the same. Like, I think the movie has that whiteboard where he's writing down memories as he remembers them. So, like, at one point he's like, who are my friends? Carl. And then you kind of get that flashback to him and his buddy security officer, Carl, like, building the first, you know, birthing the first child of Astrophage.
Uh-huh.
We have a kid. And so I think they tried that because he doesn't physically react before the flashback. So it was kind of like, oh, is he remembering in this moment? Or is it just an easy parallel for the filmmakers to move back?
Right.
But no, I think they did try to put some hints there that it was happening to him as we saw it too, because then it informed his character's choices in the next bit. Like, I think, for instance, when he realizes, you know, he wasn't actually the heroic volunteer and he had to be forced onto the ship, that's when he has his final goodbye with Rocky, and he's like, oh, like, maybe I'm not a hero, and here I am, like, taking your fuel to go home, blah blah blah,
uh-huh.
I'm not like a good person. And so I think that was one where he had sort of the physical kind of like choice to it. But I can see that being maybe less clear. But I did like the filmmaking choice of like rotating the camera, like the discombobulation of having the camera flip as as we go back into the memory. Because
oh,
there's a lot of like there's a lot of rotating camera work, because part of the spaceship
yeah.
shtick is that gravity's, you know, hard
right.
to
it's
mimic,
coming,
and so they have to like yeah have the ship that's constantly spinning, and so yeah, some of that camera work would echo as they transition back to the Earthbound timeline,
mm-hmm.
and you'd have to like settle into it too, like slowly rotating your head as the screen rotates too. There are just lots of fun details.
How do you feel about Ryan Gosling's casting? Because
I
also saw someone on TikTok be like, oh, in the book, he's like a more like an like less likable person.
Huh. I mean, obviously Ryan Gosling is like so charming. He literally yes. has charisma with a rock here. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm sure the book he's more of a dork. But I wouldn't have ever called him unlikable. Like, he wasn't like a prickly character.
Okay.
Like, the charm of the movie is the charm of the book too, which is this sort of buddy road trip comedy that unfolds between Grace and Rocky. So there's always like humor in heart, but he is like a total nerd. So there's a lot more explaining the tech and like trying and failing at things. But I wouldn't have walked away saying he was like more prickly. Mm-hmm. And Ryan Gosling, I think, is the only way this type of movie works, because even thinking of The Martian, like, yeah, people like The Martian, like it was nominated for Oscars, but Matt Damon, he's not giving the same enjoyment to a solo run film that Ryan Gosling can pull out. Like, you know, and part of that is directing and script and all that. And I think Project Hail Mary is a more fun premise and book than The Martian ever was. So I don't want to fully hate on Matt Damon, but also like, whatever, Matt Damon. Give me Ryan Gosling's version of The Martian, honestly. But I think he was really excellent in this. And I don't know if there's any point to these, like, do we have movie stars anymore when we have Ryan Gosling? Like, I think he's just like, he's so likable on and off screen, and like the way he promotes a film makes the film more enjoyable. And then clearly he's having fun on set, because Lord and Miller are often like, let's there's a lot of improv involved and a lot of like multiple mm-hmm. takes and just playing around and seeing what happens. And I think Ryan Gosling thrives in that sort of direction too. So I think it all worked very well with them.
Yeah, do we have celebrity or do we have movie stars anymore conversation is interesting, because like, I think what that usually has to do with is like, are there stars big enough to open movies well yeah. that are like not connected to known properties,
right?
Of like, if you put Ryan Gosling in a random, you know, drama, like would yeah. people go and see it, or does he need to be in something like this where it's already based on a hit book? But obviously, yeah, like we still do have movie stars who are like in big projects. And I would argue that it has less to do now with obviously a lot of the money situation does have to do with like IP and whatnot, but I think a lot of it has to do with like, is the movie good or not,
right?
We've seen things like Mission Impossible or some of these Disney yeah. live action remakes that haven't quite worked because they're bad, and that's yeah. like the talking point coming out of it, where if you have something like this that's lesser known but is really good, people are excited about it. Mm-hmm. I really like Matt Damon, but they do have very different energies.
Yeah.
And I think that is one of the things that makes these movies different, and also that makes this movie more appealing to a younger audience, where I think Matt Damon like doesn't quite have that like youthful charisma to him,
yeah.
or like the goofiness that I think, because there's like, in this movie, there's a lot of like falling and bumping yeah. and tripping and that kind of yeah. stuff, which I think works well for a younger audience, and which Ryan Gosling is like more fun in. I can't imagine like the opening scene where, you know, he's sort of like dragging himself through the space station with the beard.
Yeah.
Being like entertaining if Matt Damon is doing it. I think it's more just like, oh, he's yeah. annoyed. But yeah. I do think... So I was thinking a lot about the Oscars when I was watching this, and because, you know, the Oscars had just happened, and I feel like as of late, there is sort of like one spring slot that's set aside that's like, if your movie does really well at the theaters and if it gets really good reviews from critics, like we will sort of slot this in as one of the Best Picture nominees. And I do think that it's very possible that Project Hail Mary could be that, especially since The Martian, you know, also got nominated. And I really like Ryan Gosling's performance in this, but I was like, I think he needs like one really serious scene to sort of like nail it. And I kind of thought that's where we were going with the scene where he like says he doesn't want to go on the spaceship and then sort of gets like forced onto it. But then that turned into kind of a goofy chase sequence. And I was like, I wish that we had just gotten like one scene with Ryan Gosling that wasn't undercut with humor, that was just a little bit more like bare bones. Like,
it's hard to be funny.
This is going to be shitty. But he has done that in lots of other, like in First Man, he's not like, oh, he's so funny in all of these scenes. Like, he's such a talented actor. But I do think it's possible that he could get nominated for this because he's so good. And people obviously like him. And this would be his fourth nomination. So,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think Oscars still struggle to like see comedy as worthwhile. Whatever. Mm-hmm. But I liked his like nuance here. I liked that he didn't have like a big monologue. Like, it was all pretty reactive. Like, he was just kind of fumbling around, and even in his flashbacks, it was like he's kind of stumbling into this because he doesn't really have, he's like scared of being not liked or scared of being seen. And I think that made for an interesting character where it wasn't like your traditional hero. And I hear you're not saying that, but I think it was just like the little details of him kind of stuttering and him kind of being goofy and him thinking he could run away from this, like literally physically, I think made for an interesting character, even if it didn't hit like your usual monologue-y bits. And like, that was what was so charming about having this puppet Rocky, and knowing that they worked really hard to make sure he wasn't acting opposite a tennis ball,
right?
So that there was kind of a real physical presence to him and to Rocky, but they were able to like connect in a way that made the film feel less like monologue-y, because it is just Ryan Gosling for the most part. Yes. Like, he's in every scene, and for everything on the ship, he is the only human being to interact with. And so a lot of that means he's doing a lot of like, you know, voice recordings for sending back home, where he's like explaining the plot to us via camcorder or whatever. And it's fun to watch him make that work in a way. And you see the rise and fall of like his good days, his bad days, and kind of, you know, he's always performing, at least in those scenes, because he knows this is going back to Earth. And so there's like a humor to it that feels natural. But then there's also like watching him show Rocky the like movie room, and just like his quiet sort of, I don't know, solemnity there made it really more like earnest and relatable to someone like me, who's like, ugh, you do have this like nostalgia for what was, but you can't really explain like what it actually is to someone who's not in it. And then Rocky was so cute. And I don't know, I just feel like it was a good balance of someone who's kind of a no one getting to interact in these big ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did really love that they used the puppet. I mean, that's what they did with The Legend of Ochi as well, which I think, and also with the Mandalorian with the baby Yoda puppet. Mm-hmm. Like, I do think having the real thing just makes it work better, because you can then do these scenes where they're like looking at each other, and you know that there's that connection.
Yeah,
and you're not having to do a bunch of cuts sort of back and forth. Because, you know, oh, like, they're actually just, like, talking to midair. Or they're talking to another human, but we can't have that human in the thing because we have to turn it into a puppet or whatever.
Yeah.
I did love Sandra Hüller.
She was so good.
She's so good. And it's like, and this is why we get this Oscar nominee. You know, it's like, she is an actor.
I know.
I love when they put those kind of people in a big blockbuster movie. Because they're always just, like, they're doing the most. They're like, I'm going to make this an interesting character. Like, she could have been so dull and so boring. And instead, she, like, has so much life. You know exactly who this woman is. Mm-hmm. The scene where she does the karaoke to the Harry Styles song is incredible. Yeah. Like, I love her hair. And in that scene with Ryan Gosling, where she's like, sorry, like, I'm sorry that I have to do this, but like, you're going to space. It doesn't matter. Like, she is so fantastic good. In that. And I'm like, get this woman another.
I know. Literally. She was like from scene one. Cause I feel like they could have cast any sort of blustering. Cause in the book, they're much more rigid and like, there's not really a lot of love there. But I really, really loved her. And she did seem like someone who could lead a world faction into this, like, you know, situation of cooperation. Like, she seemed strong. She seemed, you know, together. It seemed like someone you could trust to manage this project. But then there was so much heart, like, under the surface. And watching her and Ryan get to, like, play with each other, where she doesn't feel seen because people see her as just the boss, but she does have like a lot of this, you know, inner turmoil or kind of like hope and sadness mixed up. And I thought she was so excellent. I was like mesmerized anytime she was on screen.
You know who I did not think we needed in this movie was Ken Luang, whatever, however you pronounce his name, the guy from Lost is like the fellow astronaut. I was like, what, like him doing an accent of someone who lives in Asia. I don't know. I was like, it's a discombobulating situation because I know like what your normal voice sounds like and the fact I was like, but then he also didn't have a big role. Like he had like five lines in the movie. Yeah. And I'm like, you should have just cast a random like person actually from Japan doing the actual voice here rather than hired a famous person to do five lines in a weird accent. Like,
It did not distract me. No. No, disagree. Whatever.
I mean, I love him on industry, but I'm just like, my guy, why are you in this movie for this?
Yeah, that's true. It could have been anyone. But it also could have been him. So And it was just him. Yeah. I mean, that was like, because the first trailer was really just the Earthside stuff. Like, because I think they were struggling to decide if they reveal Rocky before or not. Because in the book, like, you have a big chunk of the book before you meet Rocky. And it is kind of like, what is this thing? What's happening? And so I was sort of like torn on if they should or should not. I think it makes sense that the way they posited it after the second trailer, where they did show much more of Rocky, was like, well, this is an alien movie. Like, it wouldn't make sense to promote it as just like sad guy in space.
And I will say, I did not realize this was an alien movie.
You missed the repromo.
I saw whatever the first trailer was. Like, I knew that he got sent to space to deal with whatever this problem was. I did not realize that this was going to be like an alien buddy comedy.
So what did you think? What was your feelings? When the Rocky first appeared.
Well, I was sort of confused as to, I was like, what is this exactly? Like, is this another, like, I didn't know if it was, because he has the amnesia also at that point, I was like, oh, was this part of the plan? Like, is this some sort of, you know, like lunar or something that's been shipped up here already that he's going to have to deal with. And then he can't remember like how to work this piece of equipment that he's supposed to know how to work. So then when it did get to the alien part, I was like, oh, okay, so now we're going to do this, like, arrival sequence where we have to, like, learn each other's languages, which, great. And then I thought we were headed more in that direction of, like, okay, it's going to be, like, this ethereal thing.
They know everything,
Yeah, whatever. And then when it turned out to be, oh, this, like, sort of goofy rock puppet that's going to follow him around in this ball, I was like, oh, okay. This is not the vibe that I thought we were going to. But I do think, as far as advertising goes, like, if you know that this is sort of like a goofier movie with like a fun rock alien, you are more likely to like take your family to go see it. Whereas if you think it's just like, if you think it's The Martian all over again, where it's like Matt Damon figuring out how to use his poop for food fertilizer on Mars, it's a different, you know, you bring in a different crowd.
So I had been worried they'd like add a bunch or kind of just make it about him becoming the space master. But I really liked how they balanced it, and it led to the emotional punches of them, not only him bonding with Rocky, but like the sort of awe of everything unfolding. Like when they have that sequence on the planet, what is it called? Petrova or whatever, where they're trying to fish for the microorganism they need. And there's like this big.
And then he's smoking or whatever. Yeah.
It's just like very, it was all very beautiful and all very like epic in scale, but it was nice that it was just kind of this nobody teacher. I mean, obviously he had a doctorate, he was very smart and he was involved in this project and all props to him, but there was sort of that everyman essence to him. And so it was, there were just like a lot at play with the character that made these like bigger sequences. Yeah, it was kind of more human, just more based in our human experience rather than the show of it all, you know? Mm-hmm. The little things.
So do you think he goes back to Earth at ever at any point in the future, or at the end that he just stays on the planet with Rocky?
Well, in the book, I mean, in the movie, you know, you have basically all of the tension rattled down to the last 30 minutes where, oh, does he die? Oh, does Rocky die? Oh, did they get the microorganisms? Oh, they're both going home, but oh no, the microorganisms are leaking. We have to stop, rebuild. Oh, he's going to be stuck. I'm going to turn back. Like that all happens in the last 30 minutes of a 2-hour, 45-minute film. So it does like feel a lot faster getting those emotional hits in. But in the book, I remember there was a lot more about like, he actually can't go home because he doesn't have enough food. Like he doesn't have enough fuel, but then he also realizes like, oh, he wouldn't have enough food for the return. And so I think there was a lot more in the sort of epilogue of him living with the rock people and then building this terranium for him because they want him to live long enough so that he can know if his son survives. And so there's like, he has like a whole life there and there is some missing of Earth. But by the time it rolls around that they're like, actually, we have enough fuel for you to go home if you want. It's like, he wouldn't know anyone by the time he got there, right? Like everyone would be dead. So I don't remember exactly, but I think he's like, well, I really like this moment of my life right now. And so he chooses to kind of stay and teach the Little Rock people. And it's very cute. And I really like that they kept that because it was kind of a weird ending for a book where you always get the conquering hero. Like he crash lands in the sea and it's a big epic moment of him getting back to Earth and kissing the sand. But I liked that it was like, well, sometimes we have to pivot and he can still find joy where he is. And it's like a big, you know, he's a space explorer, but also in the day-to-day, he's just teaching these little alien guys about about science. And that's just really cute.
I mean, not to bring up perhaps your least favorite sci-fi movie ever, but I did think a little bit of the movie, what was it, Passages with Jennifer Lawrence
is it Chris Pratt? Yeah.
Chris Pratt, Nightmare. Yes. Where it is like, okay, like we are stuck here, so then like let's just sort of make the most of this life while we're here.
That's one reading of that.
That's
his reading, yeah.
That's his reading of it, yeah.
I'll find the hot blonde. He's
gonna wake her up. But, like, you know, with the end where, like, they know that they can't plant a bunch of, you know, trees or whatever in this.
Yeah. Wreak room. Havoc. For,
Right. And so I sort of, like, I like the idea of him knowing, like, yeah, I can't go back. So, like, let me just enjoy this time here. I think the fact that he, could theoretically go back but doesn't choose to is, like...
Right.
More interesting in kind of a weird way. I don't know if it works exactly. I was sort of annoyed, though, I will say. I don't... Like, this movie is long. And while it did not necessarily feel long for most of it, when I thought, okay, we've done it, we've solved the thing, we're going back to Earth, like, great, we're headed towards the end, and then the whole other problem arrived, actually, Rocky's going to die on his ship, so now I have to make this choice, and blah, blah. And I was like, okay, this, I think that they needed to rework the, speed of some of this or something. Like, they needed to shorten the movie, I felt, and maybe cut some stuff from, like, earlier. Although I don't really know what you'd cut, but just because I felt like by the time I got to that point where they were like, psych, it's not the end, we have another 20 minutes, I was like, okay, like, let's wrap this up. I don't love when a movie has, like, multiple end points. And uh-huh. this felt more intentional than, you know, certain movies where it's just like, okay, it just, like, goes and goes and goes. But I did feel like, okay, did this need to be 2 hours and 45 minutes? I don't necessarily know, especially when you think about, like, what was the action that was going on for the first hour and a half of this? It was a lot of, you know, like, table setting, and I don't necessarily know if we needed all of that. But that's a...
Yeah, I mean, I think it did. It did, like, it didn't feel like a fake out in the sense of, like, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, having, like, multiple fade to blacks.
Yeah.
But it did feel, like, compact enough that you were sort of like, okay, we just got over the, is Rocky dead? We just got over the, can he go back to Earth? And now it's like, oh, now he has to go and rescue Rocky. And so I can see, like, wanting to give space to those beats, like, maybe a little bit more, and just kind of allow it to breathe. And, like, you know, still have those climactic moments, but maybe not in the last 30 minutes alone. But I do think it worked in the sense of there's a lot of planning involved in a scientific experiment. And so, and then you have to deal with the fallout. And so I feel like in some ways it would be hard to have, like, oh no, Rocky's dead at the beginning, because you don't have the emotional relationship. But then you wouldn't have the situation with the astrophage, you know, virus or whatever, if they didn't already have, like, I don't know. I don't know how you would stretch it out is my main point.
You know what I think they needed to do, actually, now that I'm thinking about this more? I think they just needed to give us, like, some sort of, like, Chekhov's gun kind of a thing. So that even though he doesn't know in that moment that, like, something's going on with, that we know, oh, there's still another problem that he hasn't figured out yet that we need to solve.
Yeah, I know. It's hard to do with the invisible microorganism, though, you know?
Right.
You can't show the...
I mean, yes, exactly. But, like, I think if there was a line somewhere a little bit earlier that was sort of, like, nodded to the fact that there was a problem.
They love eating this, yeah.
Yeah, or whatever. Yeah. And that then we have an inkling in our brain.
Right.
Like, he thinks this is done, but actually I don't think this is.
Yeah.
Because instead it felt like the momentum of the movie had, like, stopped.
Yeah.
And it was like, and now we have to restart completely and get back to the degree that we were before.
Yeah.
I think especially when you're, like, when you're after that 2 hour mark and you slow the momentum down to zero, then picking that back up is sort of like, okay, like, I need to muster a lot of energy. But yes, and overall, I really, like, I liked this movie. I don't know if it's something that I felt, like, so connected to in a, like, oh, I love this, or oh, I need to rewatch this, like with Sinners or something.
Yeah.
But I did enjoy it, and I really appreciated the craft of it and all of the pieces of between the acting and the cinematography and the production design and all of that. And I do just love, like, a well put together outer space movie.
I know. It's interesting, though, because it's like, I was watching this and I was thinking about how most people reacted to, like, Everything Everywhere All at Once. Whereas I had, like, a real traumatic response to that because I needed therapy at the time, and that was my that was my push too. But I was watching this and I was like, this is like exactly the, like, life-affirming film that I need. Like, yeah, it's not as, like, heavy-handed a message. Like, sure, the world is dying, and that can be read as very literal in our day and age, but I just felt like his attachment to a world that he didn't really have attachment within was really, like, tender. And watching him and Sandra Hüller's character, especially, like, singing Sign of the Times, and, like, all the sequences of him appreciating, like showing Rocky what Earth was like and those videos of Earth. It's like so cliche, but it like really spoke to me on an emotional level of like, we're fucked, but it's like, wow, what a beautiful, what a beautiful Earth. Like, what a beautiful show. Like, we tried, and hopefully, it'd be nice if we could work together like the world does in this. And it'd be nice to like remember how important compassion and cooperation are to the continuation of our entire species. Like that should be like period, point blank, done. And it was nice to escape into a world where people understood that. And like even the line of like, you don't have to be like, bravery isn't a gene. You just have to be brave for one person. Like, I think it's like, if we could just have a little bit more forward thinking in the way we examine our lives and our needs and our opportunities, like we'd be better for it. And I like movies like this that remind you that, like, yeah, you don't have to have a lot in common. You can be a rock and a human and you can still find common ground. Like, just work together, you freaking losers. And that was nice.
There is always something very, yeah, life-affirming about, like, the Apollo 13 kind of vibe of, okay, like, we have this problem that yeah. is really imminent. Like, now we have to solve it. How do we do that?
Yeah.
And when you can sort of cut through a lot of the posturing and BS yeah. of, like, oh, yeah, humans have figured out ways to, you know, overcome so many problems in our history. And we are capable of doing it again. It's like, we have all the tools that we need. We just have to figure yeah. out like how to use them and how to stop shooting ourselves in the foot in the process. Mm-hmm. I did appreciate that. But then at the same time, yeah, it's not like it sugarcoats it, because when you cut back to Sandra Hüller at the end, it's like, yeah, the planet has gotten so bad that they're like living in these ice caves or whatever. So
we don't know the full story. We don't know. She might just be working on a ship still. It's fine. She's a little old. She's just taking a cruise. You know,
She said, ugh, these hot climates are too much for me.
She's doing a little tour to Antarctica and it's great. I felt misty-eyed throughout it. I thought you'd appreciate that I have some soul left in me. And I feel like this was a nice movie reminder of like the best of humanity. And also
that's proof that the therapy is like really working.
The therapy is definitely
everything,
working.
Everything everywhere all at once is paying off.
It was traumatic to experience, but it was the kick in my butt I needed. And now I can sit through this movie and not have a panic attack about, well, this isn't realistic and humans are the worst and the world's going to shit because we can't cooperate like they do in this fantasy. I have a better handle on those feelings for sure. And also,
I mean, I was also sobbing during the entirety of Everything Everywhere All at Once, but probably for slightly different reasons.
Yeah.
But also very cathartic at like a 10 a.m.
I would not have called it cathartic.
People, me just being like,
no,
well, it was cathartic for me.
Yeah, I'm glad. I'm glad. This was nice for me. I also really loved the music. I've got to say that.
Oh, yeah.
I loved the soundtrack for this. And I feel like this was a really great movie and I've felt myself itching to tell everyone to go see it. Just because, yeah, it's a very well-made movie, like craft-wise, like you said, acting. And then on top of it, it's just like a very, even if you're not getting the emotional payoff I am, like it's just a very charming story and it's very sweet and fun. Mm-hmm. And then on top of it, it's healing to people broken inside.
One thing that I am sort of intrigued by, and I've been trying to find articles about this, but it doesn't seem like anyone has written it. And I realized that I could pitch this myself, but it would require me going back to the theater and watching it at the time, which I really don't want to do. Not that I don't want to, but I'm just like, yeah. But Ryan Gosling's t-shirts in this movie. Mm. He has so many different weird t-shirts. Mm-hmm. And then I guess one of them is cats related.
Yeah.
So I saw an interview where this girl was asking, like, why is he wearing a cat's t-shirt? And they were like, oh, we wanted the t-shirts to sort of be like signs to him as to who he was. So like, even though he has amnesia, he like sees these t-shirts and he's like, oh, I must have liked the musical Cats or whatever.
Right.
I don't know if that's a part of the novel as well. But
I don't remember.
I'm like the thing that's the funniest about that for me is that he did not pack these shirts himself, obviously, like, because he got dragged, he got, like, you know,
well, but he'd been living on the base, so I think it was still his stuff.
But so I'm like I love that he, like, had all of these weird ass t-shirts,
yeah,
and, like, Sandra Hüller had to, like, go to his apartment and be like, okay, let me pack a bag for you,
yeah,
with just 40 graphic tees that you need so that you can then wear them all in space.
Yeah.
I love thinking about her being like, what are these shirts? Like, such a weird concoction, yeah, of, like, very clean looking graphic, yeah, tees that you, yeah, happen to have.
Yeah. Well, and that also reminds me of just, like, the funny, like, yeah, there's a lot of weird humorous moments where he is, like, realizing he's talking to this heads of state in a cat tee, and he'll, like, mm-hmm, try to hide it or whatever. Or he's always, like, kind of fumbling around, not realizing how serious his work is and, like, who he's interacting with. And I liked all that. I liked all the little, like, I think it speaks to how good of this sort of, you know, being so based in animation and that, like, the visual humor that allows you to create and craft, like, having them bring that to this live action, like, it makes them a very interesting, like, directing duo. Obviously, 21 Jump Street was a huge success and blah, 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 like, Into the Spider-Verse. Like, they have a lot of success, but I think this was a big swing to do, like, this sort of sci-fi epic. And I really applaud them for bringing their humor and, like, their distinct type of craft to something that could have been easily kind of just mirrored other space, mm-hmm, projects before them.
Well, clearly they're really good at writing clever stuff.
Yeah.
Like, their first thing was Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Yeah.
Did really well, but is a very random property to be working with.
Yeah.
And then 21 Jump Street, the Lego Movie, 22 Jump Street. And then this is their fifth
yeah,
movie. Although they also had the weird mishap with the Solo movie, where, like, they were originally directing it, the Star Wars A Solo Story, mm-hmm, and then, like, got bumped off of it or whatever, and Ron Howard took it over. So that's interesting. But
what could have been? Yeah.
But they have been producers and writers, yeah, on more things, yeah, including the Spider-Verse movies.
Yeah.
I am, yeah, interested to see where this goes. They are a sort of beloved duo, I think, in, mm-hmm, the industry. I could see them in some ways getting nominated for Best Director for this, depending on how the race goes. Although this year, I think it's going to, yeah, be a bit of a bloodbath because you've got a lot of the heavy hitters returning in, you know, Spielberg and such. I don't know if the Martin Scorsese movie is supposed to come out this year or if that's coming out next year. It's been gun filming because I've been seeing that picture of Jennifer Lawrence and Leonardo DiCaprio going around the internet.
Yeah.
But, and then there's the
Doomsday
Inuyuritu movie with that stars Tom Cruise. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
But any final thoughts on Project Hail Mary?
No. My crush on Ryan Gosling has been longstanding, though. I used to cut out, like, photos of him in high school, so.
And my crush on Sandra Hüller has been.
Yeah, look at that. You know? Yeah. Representation. No,
Ryan Gosling is not really my type, unfortunately.
That's okay.
He's definitely
for the straights, I think.
Yeah.
Does he have a big gay following?
I don't think so. Yeah. He is sort of an interesting celebrity in that way. He got the
white woman vote, which was an important one, unfortunately.
No, and like, he was cast so well in Barbie for that.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
That is an interesting contingent.
Yeah.
Next week we have sort of an odd grouping of movies coming out, which include Forbidden Fruits, the Lola movie. And They Will Kill You, the Zazie Beetz.
Has
a hammer.
Isn't there one? What's the one I saw so much for? I thought was this week. I'll look into it.
Well, Super Mario comes out the following week, and so does the drama.
Oh,
those were the two that you're thinking of.
Okay,
those are the next big movies to come out, I guess. So I don't know. We'll have to figure out something.
Yeah, always.
I'm like, you know, this is where some of our best episodes come when we have to watch something Lola that Tung, really yeah. sucks. Did you watch the Pout Pout Fish that apparently came out this week? Is that been a hit in the children's community?
No.
Are there TV shows like what has come out? Should we do an episode on The Bride, which was so bad that they pulled it from the theater down here after
a week? They did. You know what? Yes. That's rude. I would do an episode on The Bride because I'm sick of the overreaction to a woman's bad movie. Okay.
Well, you told me that it literally last week when we were recording the episode, mm-hmm. like, oh, The Bride is not, like, you know, that bad, whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, like, I'll go see it. And then literally, look, not showing. Like, okay.
That's messed up. Okay. Write an email to your Florida AMC. That's crazy to me.
Here's the other inside scoop on the Florida situation.
Okay.
So, there is an AMC, but it's like 20 minutes away. So I can only go there if I can rope my family members seeing a movie with me there. So I've had to so I saw like Ready or Not 2, and I also went and saw the second Ninja Turtles movie, which they incredible. That's at the Regal. And the Regal used to be 20 screens, but then for whatever reason, they shortened it down to 11 screens. But the back half of the theater is still there. It's just like they built a wall and now it's like storage or whatever.
Oh,
so
wow.
I don't know what's going on with that and why that decision was made. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, so they only have 11 screens at the Regal, which I think is why The Bride got bumped. But it is crazy that, yeah, like that movie came out on March 6th and was chopped 2 weeks later.
It's crazy. It's still showing at mine, so...
But okay, well, Lola Tung it is. Or
yeah.
Oh, there's also an AI documentary that's
coming. No.
We could see that.
Oh, no. I refuse.
What are other things? John Lilly and the Earth Coincidence Control Office. I don't know what that is, but apparently it's coming out next week. There's a movie coming out on Hulu that looks like it stars Vince Vaughn as twins called Mike and Nick and Alice.
I did see the trailer about that. He goes to kill himself in the past or something.
There's also something called You're Dating a Narcissist that appears to star Marissa Tomei, who we do love. So, you know.
Yeah, we'll find something.
We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out as we always, always do. But thanks everyone for listening. And we'll be back next week to discuss God knows what. See you then. Bye.